Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
You've just been hearing on the news there, Leo Varadkar has said that it might be possible he might see a United Ireland in his lifetime. Presuming that the Taoiseach doesn't plan on living for 1,000 years, this would mean that we wouldn't see another century of partition on this island. So what would be the first steps to make something like this remotely possible? Dr. Peter McLaughlin is a senior lecturer at Queen's University in Belfast, and he joins us now on News Talk. Good afternoon, Peter.
Hello, Sean. Nice to speak to you.
Now, I suppose in our news bulletin there, inevitably there was criticism of the Taoiseach saying this because this isn't a great time given all the rows over Brexit, etc. Is his timing unfortunate, do you think?
Well, you could say his timing is unfortunate, but just the timing is unfortunate. My understanding is he would defend it as it's part of the annual conference speech and so on. It does seem unfortunate, but then lots of things that happen relating to Northern Ireland. As Varadkar said, there never seems to be a good time. Okay, so I can understand people saying that it doesn't help at the current time, but then equally, when is a good time to discuss this?
Now, and there may be something of, a two-dimensional view from this part of the island, that if you mention even talking about a United Ireland, half the population of the north go into paroxysms. Is that necessarily the case, or are we talking about a smaller group of people?
Well, it's not half, but it's not a much, much smaller position either. So a lot of change is happening here. What has been suggested recently by electoral results and surveys is that units no longer have a clear majority. That doesn't mean that they're the smallest population by any stretch, but it means there's a much larger group now that's undecided. It doesn't mean that nationalists have a majority either, but there's a crucial population there that is neither nationalist or unit, or maybe feels Irish and British, or doesn't give a hoot about nationalisms either way and is concerned about the environment or whatever it is. So that's the complexity we're talking about now.
Yeah, and is this a generational change in that there's a generation has grown up without the Troubles?
I think there's an element of that. Certainly you would expect there to be more liberal attitudes, although we can simplify that at times. There can be a staunch in attitudes from young people. But generally you're going to have, as we see elsewhere, it's not just on this island, but I've already mentioned the environmental issue. We know that young people, quite rightly, have a lot more sense than some old generations, although, again, we don't want to simplify. But they're more concerned about other issues, which are more fundamental, whether it's the environment or whether it's LGBT rights or whatever. So there is definitely a generational element to the increased complexity of the debate that's going on, which is not just about green or orange or whatever constitution.
And are the main political parties in Northern Ireland reflecting any of those concerns?
I think they are, and I think you see that, well, not just in the traditional parties, but obviously there's been something of a breakthrough for the Green Party, not to the same extent as in the South, but at least that it has two seats. And certainly when I speak to my students, they can be a little bit cynical about that. We'll say, well, that's 100% more than the amount of Green representatives we have in the Westminster Parliament. So you have new parties, and you've had that real growth of the Alliance Party, and I think that reflects issues like that, and particularly the thing that I haven't mentioned so much yet is Europe. That's clearly very important for young people as well. And I think that's definitely fed the Alliance vote. And perhaps people are overestimating how strong it could want to be. But it's definitely a surge there. And it's definitely fed by young people. So those kind of non-aligned parties. And then I think even when you see other parties like Sinn Féin and the SDLP, they can't ignore issues. Or the UP and DUP, whether it's women's rights or whatever it is. So there's lots more issues that all the parties have to engage with.
Yeah, but are they engaging with those? Because one gets the impression that you can make people forget about those by bringing up, the national question in whatever form once again and rouse about Irish language bills, etc.
Yeah, I think they are engaging. I don't think they're ignoring them. I don't think anyone could ignore the absolutely vital issues we have, particularly around the environment and so on. But yes, it's obviously easier for people to drag the debate back and those who don't want change. And don't forget, that's not a simple green or orange thing. It sometimes is simplified that it's maybe unionist parties are more opposed on something like women's rights or LGBT rights. But don't forget, there are conservative Catholics also. So it's a lot easier, as we see in all contexts, for people to play the kind of more conservative line on culture. Again, culture wars are not unique to Northern Ireland. They're probably more amplified there. But they do distract from other important issues, and they are used. But I think there are important politicians who see the importance of these as well.
So on those issues that you've just cited there, are there major differences between the parties in the North?
Well, despite what I've said there, that there seems to be a simplified definition there of yes, the DUP has taken, and unionists generally have taken a more certainly ambivalent attitude or critical attitude to change on LGBT rights and women's rights and other issues. And we see also the DUP's position on climate change is not exactly in line with the science, to put it politely. So it can seem like that. And you do have now, that is what's interesting, is you'll have the SDLP and Sinn Féin quite often aligning with the Alliance Party or the Greens. And so there seems to be a more, it's not simply a nationalist unionist thing, but a progressive versus conservative situation. So again, it's more complex.
Okay, well, and so is there then, if you like, a middle ground of opinion in Northern Ireland that doesn't, you know, that might be a little bit green or a little bit orange, but not too strong in either direction, who maybe are opening, who are open to having a discussion about it in Northern Ireland at least?
I think they are, and I think they're the most important group because they're going to decide things. We know how nationalists are going to vote, we know how unionists are going to vote, and they're very unlikely to change their mind in most instances. So it really is that group that's kind of detached from that, that is more open-minded, that is considering the realities, the economics, or whether it means Northern Ireland effectively would return to Europe or whatever it is. They're looking at the actual pros and cons of these things, and they're the most important group. So yes, I think there is not only a middle ground, but a growing middle ground, certainly.
Right, and with the things, because some of the things that Leo Varadkar kind of alluded to, which were, you know, hints of a possible future, new titles, shared symbols, how devolution in the North would fit to the new arrangements, a new Senate, representation of minorities, are those kind of factors, because that's, you know, we want to make unionists feel as comfortable as possible for that middle ground. Are those things really that important, or is it more about the bread and butter issues?
I think it's a combination of the two. Symbolic issues, we know, are very important. Again, it's not unique to Northern Ireland. We see this rise across the world. So they are important to people to different degrees, but there's very few people, even if they claim not to be nationalist, whether that's French or whatever, nationalism, that they'll have a sentiment there. We see that when you've got important football on and so forth. These things are important, but equally, of course, bread and butter issues and people's what they take home at the end of the month. And as I keep mentioning, the environment is probably the most crucial issue for us all. You know, so all of these things are very important, and there's a complex mix of the two. But I think you've got to discuss them both. I think Varadkar's got a point. Symbols are important, but also the economic realities of this have to be discussed, certainly.
But in any initial conversation, it always seems to be the case that initial conversations take place, and they're always between parties who are individuals or parties who are kind of leaning towards the United Ireland anyway. How do you bring people who are completely against it or suspicious of it, at least, into that conversation?
That's very hard to do. I don't think anyone's got the answer to that. And I think, without being overly cynical, you're not going to convince some people. You're not. It's like any election. You've always got people who are set in the ways who know how they're going to vote. But you still have to have this debate to see if you can get some movement, some acquiescence with what's going on. Because I suppose with this debate, unionists might respond to what Varadkar said and say, and we've heard it before, like the DUP saying, there's nothing you can do to make us want a united Ireland. That may well be the case. But you could equally say that was the case with nationalists in Northern Ireland. There's nothing that would make them accept the union. And yet they engage in a debate where things were changed, or where important measures were taken to ensure equality, to respect the Irish identity and passports, and now we have a debate about language, the links to the Republic of Ireland through the Good Friday Agreement. You know, changes were made that reconciled, to some degree, nationalists and even Republicans to maybe not embrace the union, but acquiesce in it. Mm. So, it's much more complex. Of course, unionists are not going to accept a united Ireland. If they do, they're no longer unionists by definition.
Yes.
But it's not to be pedantic about that, but it's saying, there are more plural and open-minded. There are people who are more nationalist, more unionist, or who are a mix of both, or have parents from both communities, or whatever it is. So it's to try and get consensus around a majority on what's the best to do. It's not just about green or orange. It's about many other things. So it's not simply a vote on a united Ireland, but it's about what consensual politics, that's democracy, is how can you get as many people as possible to be as happy as possible in the way you govern your society.
I suppose, yeah. How many people are what's the proportion of people in the North who are pragmatic enough to entertain that notion?
I suppose we can't be certain.
Yeah.
We can't be certain. I mean, the evidence is suggesting there are more, even if, again, referring back to the Vote for the Alliance and survey attitudes, where you get more people saying that they're not nationalist or unionist. But we do have to be careful of those opinions. Sometimes what people say in surveys, it can be, well, they don't want to be seen as being nationalist or unionist. They see that being assertive, something they might associate negatively, as if that means that they're polarized or opposed to the other side. You only know when people vote in the secrecy of the ballot box. So opinion polls can be helpful, but we won't really know how pragmatic people can be until we have that debate and discuss it. And that's why I would overall defend the position to continue having the debate. It doesn't mean that we should have a referendum anytime soon, or that it would be a straightforward outcome, or indeed that there might be many referenda into the future. And again, that's, I think, what Varadkar's saying is as at least Doug Beattie, the unionist leader, mentioned. So, you know, he's a young man, relatively young politician. This could be on for a while. So I think, we just have to continue really discussing all the realities of this. And I think, again, referring back to the Brexit example, that shows us why things weren't discussed in the run up to that referendum.
Yeah, and I think all parties agree that 50% plus one in any direction isn't going to solve the problem in any sort of border poll. Would you have any sense of what would be a tipping point if there were a series of polls and then the number in favour of a United Ireland crept up? What would be the point at which Northern Ireland society as a whole would start to go, well, maybe this should become a reality, whether we oppose it or not?
I think some of that is kind of happening in reaction to the survey results, because we are suggesting now that there's not a clear majority in favour of keeping the union, but there's still a large part that's undecided. So I think that's why you have this really serious debate. And I understand why that's very concerning for unionists. That's why you're getting the reaction you are, because that's really palpable here. Even teaching at Queen's University, you see young people from a unionist background. The debate is really upon us, and that, understandably, that's quite threatening for some people. And that's why, personally, if I was going to make any personal contribution to this, that problem of the 50% plus one, it's such a binary debate. And arguably the more constructive thing we should be talking about is going, recognising that Northern Ireland is you can't accommodate unionists in the United Ireland any more than you can accommodate nationalists under the union completely. That Northern Ireland is both British and Irish, and that we have to move towards some kind of solution that recognises that duality. And maybe it's some kind of joint governmental or joint sovereignty arrangements where we respect equal sides, both identities equally. That might be more accommodating, because a simple United Ireland or staying under the union, it's the same binary of Brexit, you're in or you're out, and that's very problematic and polarising.
Also, what is the view in Northern Ireland when people look down south? Do they think that the population of the Republic of Ireland really understand the dynamics, the political dynamics of Northern Ireland that well?
I think there can be a bit of ignorance both ways. I think, obviously we share certain media and so on, but they can't, and this would even be on the nationalist side. Again, I refer to my own teaching experiences, that even in the nationalist community, there can be some lack of understanding of the very different political system in the South. And I'm sure that there are ways in which, people in the South really find it very hard to understand too. But again, we can't make simplifications. Don't forget, we've got huge border communities on both sides. So people in Donegal probably understand far better some of the realities of what's going on and the problems of Brexit than maybe people from Cork. And likewise, people from Fermanagh in Northern Ireland are going to understand the problems of the border and the economic realities far more than someone from Belfast. So again, it's really hard to say. There are ignorances, but it's never straightforward. It's never a binary in that regard. Mm-hmm. It's far more complex, which is why I'm repeating myself a little, but it is a constructive conversation to have and to understand that, it's not simply green or orange or one way or the other.
Peter, thanks for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Peter McLaughlin, a senior lecturer in the School of History, Anthropology, Philosophy and Politics and International Relations. God, that's a big school at Queen's University in Belfast. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. Once again today, we are going to give away €800 with thanks to Carols of Tullamore. All we want you to do is send us in the recipe for your most delicious sandwich, which of course would have as one constituent part some Carols of Tullamore. Moore's crafting premium succulent deli ham. So all you have to do is text into 53106 with the word sandwich along with your name, the recipe for your sandwich, where you are in the country, and that text will cost you 30 cents. We'll tell you who the winner of the €800 is after the break, or at the end of the show, I should say. After the break, though, it's time for farming.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.